Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and as always, joining us is your co-host, Jim.
Always.
Every time. Couldn't do this without you, man. This is your idea. This whole thing was your idea.
It's like Colt 45. I work every time.
Oh, my God. And this week, guys, we have, I think the most amount of guests we've ever had. We have, what, 6 guests?
And this is everybody that's in the game.
Yeah, we have 7. No.
The entire population of
Jump. 6 or 7 guests.
That was 2 years ago. 2 years ago was the entire population of the game.
Someone, hang on. I think we got everybody.
You're going to make me go look, see who's on.
That's their problem.
Mark, we got Chris. We don't have Brandon. We don't have Grim Falcon. Oh, well. So we don't have him. So we have 6 guests. Maybe he'll come on later. We have 6 guests all joining me from the Phoenix-like resurrected game called Jumpgate. Now, y'all might have seen on the site, I've been talking about Jumpgate a lot lately. And, folks, that's just going to continue to happen.
A lot.
Because yeah, because seriously, I probably mentioned it here on the show and elsewhere that it's one of my all-time favorite games. I put more time in that than any other game, period. So I rounded up a bunch of people who played the game from the beginning, from the old days, to talk about the game. So I'm going to go in alphabetical order from first name down. Let's just do this. We have Chris, or as he's known in the game, how do you say that? Teleton?
Teleton, yep.
Teleton, okay.
How's it going?
All right. We have Mark, or in the game, Ambrosius. Did I say that right? Ambrosius?
There you go.
Ambro, dude.
He's ambrodextrous.
Bro. We have Matthew, or Sephiroth. Did I say that correctly?
You did say that correctly, yes.
Yay! Oleg, or Zver, Z-V-E-R in the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's from Canada, so you have to say Sephiroth, eh?
That's a good one, eh?
It's true, yeah, you missed the A at the end.
Are you from Canada, really? You're in Canada?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. That's very awesome. International game.
You know, you only didn't know that because of how much I rage.
So he's also one of the people who grew up with the game.
Yeah, do you apologize every time you shoot somebody down? Be like, sorry, bro.
Just start sending an F4 afterwards, yeah.
Yeah. No, he's the guy that runs through 7 sectors just to chase you down because you suck.
Yep.
That was Shonda, or in the game, Regan. Fuck.
After the president.
Shut up. After the exorcist. Anyway.
After the exorcist. And finally, I skipped one because I was being an opportunist. We have Peter, or Elder 23, one word, in the game.
Hello.
Hi. So, guys, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to talk about this just amazing game that none of us – I don't know about you guys, but I never thought I would play this ever again.
Me either.
No.
I was pretty sure it was dead.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it shut down in, April or May of 2012, I think. Once it shut down a year and a half ago, roughly, I thought it was dead and gone, and I looked to Elite Dangerous and Star Citizen.
And Border Space.
And what? And
Border Space.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's okay.
If you don't know, Border Space is being developed by 3 of the guys here, as was kind of... This was kind of I'm being told I'm talking too loud.
He's excited.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Everybody whisper. Whisper.
Always excited when I talk. Oh, okay.
They're going to think
being admonished right now on live podcast. This is great.
Bad Brian. The beatings will continue until morale improves.
Ow. Ow.
I thought y'all were talking about dishes.
Yeah, so we were talking about balls.
So this was developed in 2001 by NetDevil?
No, in 1990. Some of us started beta late 99, I think.
Yep. Yeah, mid to late 99, but it started development even earlier than that, like 97,
yeah.
98 maybe. And a bunch of us – okay, who was in the beta? I was in the beta. Who else was in the beta?
I was in the beta.
Your bro was.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got a few pilots who were in the beta, and that was a crazy time. Oh, the whole game was really a crazy time, but that was crazy.
Yeah, there was no There was very little penalty for killing players. There were no tags.
There was no oversight whatsoever.
There was no flux. There was no AI at all in the game. It was player versus player, and that was it.
Pure anarchy.
Yes.
Really was.
Wow. I missed out.
Yeah, I know. I really wish I'd announced that.
There wasn't even any unregulated space back then.
That's right.
It was all regulated space.
That's right.
I love the screenshots from back in early beta when there's like six sectors or whatever.
Yeah. You could go from like Oct Core to Soul Core in like two jumps.
So folks, I guess not everyone knows what Jump Gate is. We should probably say that what it is first. Jumpgate is a massively multiplayer online first person space sim with a hybrid Newtonian physics model that also models drag and mass. Does that sound about right?
That's pretty close. Right to me.
And it was basically like there were rumblings of a Privateer Online in the late 90s. I believe it actually made the cover of PC Gamer at one point.
Yes, it did.
And a lot of people were excited about that. And then EA pretty much killed Wing Commander, something I'm still bitter about. So that was that. And then a little while later, we hear about Jumpgate. And Jumpgate is pretty much the closest thing we've pretty much ever had to an online Elite or Privateer. Basically, there's no autopilot at all in this game. Basically.
So it's exact opposite of EVE Online.
It is the exact opposite of EVE.
You have no idea how
EVE Online is a point click fest. Orbit of 500 meters and fire. Ooh, the excitement.
You don't need a spreadsheet to play this.
Right. Well, you don't have to open
I don't know.
It depends on if you're running the economy or not.
Yeah, I was going to say, hold on a second. I think there's a few spreadsheets out there.
I just saw that huge spreadsheet today and my eyes started crying.
Guy who runs the economy in EVE has a PhD, for God's sakes.
Oh, that's right. They have a PhD advisor for their economy. They actually have an economist for that game. That's right.
You need an economist for this fucking game.
We do.
Yes, we do.
So this game,
we just
have like some guy, you know,
some guy. But yeah, this game is basically entirely player run for the most part, especially now. And the players have control pretty much of the economy, and it's very dynamic. Like you can play, you can do combat with other players, you can do combat against the AI, you can mine, you could haul. There's a lot you can do in this game, and I spent almost the entirety of the game not in combat with other players. I never did PvP.
I've spent the entirety of the game apparently crashing into the side of the station trying to dock.
I watched that myself with my own eyes.
I put on that Miley Cyrus Wrecking Ball song, and then somehow I roll.
Jim, don't feel bad. Don't feel bad.
Well, I mean, I started out as Soul, and for the first year, I don't think I shot at another player. I was too busy hauling.
Yeah.
Jim's description of crashing into the station is basically the quintessential noob experience.
Yeah.
I always liked that you could hear the gong from inside the station.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool.
An impact message. That's
you hear them crashing on the outside.
You hear a crash, and it tells you.
You see,
that's your cue to laugh.
Hey, let's try not to talk over everybody. What were you saying, Reggie, and then Oleg?
Yeah, go ahead, Reggie.
I said that the best is you hear them crash, and then it tells you who, just impact so you can laugh at them.
Boom. So-and-so entered the station.
it actually says, it would say, like, Sephiroth has impacted the station.
The game has never said that ever.
Nice. Remember that. But Jim, don't feel bad. A couple hours later, I was feeling lazy and I used the docking beacon and didn't turn off my throttle. And so I too crashed into the station, even though I am not a noob.
So the docking beacon, is that something that was implemented later to make it a little more player friendly?
Much, like 7-8 years later.
Yes.
Because the experience that I got initially with this is like back in the day when we were playing Elite in the early 90s, and where you have to like line up to the station and then kind of glide in the door without touching the sides. And it's almost like playing Operation, right? Like if the station had a big red nose that would light up and be like, eh.
That would be funny. I would love it if they added that. But, folks, this game was live for, God, 13 years? Roughly?
Well, it was released in 01, if you want to count 01? From release.
I thought it was 2000 it was released.
No, September 23rd, 2001. I remember when last day was.
Damn.
Oh, so it was in beta for 2 years?
Almost.
Yeah. At least, yeah.
Oh, I don't remember it being that long.
Yeah.
It was a long beta.
That was one of the things that people said were kind of like why it wasn't that successful is the beta was too long, so everybody left by the time it went live.
Mm.
I guess no, actually, we were doing really well that first year. What happened was they kept promising us the expansion and kept promising and kept promising.
Oh, kept promising.
And we never got it. So most of us said, fine.
Hey, we'll get it soon.
but at the same time, 3DO didn't have any budget for advertising because they were barely alive as it was. And so there was no marketing push at all when the game was released.
How many companies has this game killed?
Three?
Three. Yeah.
Are we counting Themis? I guess Themis didn't really die.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Like I'm looking at the history of NetDevil, and I see a lot of burning carnage in their wake, right? So there's Jumpgate, which actually lived the longest. Their first thing outlived everything else. They had that warmonger Operation Downtown Destruction. I think that was just a single player thing. But other MMOs that they did, Auto Assault, which
what a pile of shit that was.
It kind of was a parabolic arc. It launched and then nosedived instantly.
Had all the glide angle of a cinder block.
Yeah, not good. Which is unfortunate because I really like the board game Car Wars, and I keep wishing that somebody would make an online thing. But
someday
and then they made Lego Universe, which I guess the players were supposed to build everything, right?
They also the Warmonger, I think, was more to showcase the physics tech than to be an actual serious game.
Oh right,
yeah, it was kind of a proof of concept.
Right. I heard Lego Universe is actually pretty good. I know of people who have kids who played it with them were really upset that the game was shut down.
Well, I think the biggest problem they had with Lego Universe was that it wasn't generating any revenue.
Yeah.
There were a lot of kids playing it, but they weren't spending any money.
Yeah, those kids just don't have the credit cards.
Yeah, for some reason.
So what happened with whenever I was at E3 in 2001, they were starting to talk about the second game already.
Here we go.
Oh, Evolution.
Yeah, so that was Evolution. Oh. But then I saw some videos of it a couple years later, and I was like, this is terrible. So it looked like more like an arcade thing or something. And I don't know if they were trying to go for like a freelancer style game or what.
It went in several directions during development.
Yeah.
I actually got in it on the friends and family testing.
Did you?
And got to play the game, yes.
Oh, I was going to ask if anyone here had actually played it.
Yeah, I actually played it. And I mean, the flight model was great. The afterburner stuff was kind of interesting, how you could go into boost mode. And then but it was interesting because your ship was – the speed ratios were still the same. So if I had a faster ship than you, I could run you down in boost mode.
Hmm.
And so I could actually fly up to you, get really close, come out of boost, and shoot you, and then you would drop out of boost.
Oh my god!
So yeah, there were some interesting things, and then like the missions, there was a mission pointer that kind of showed you where to go for your mission, and so running missions kind of turned into follow the blue dot.
Oh,
that's like basically modern MMO, basically. Like,
right.
In terms of. Like, think about WoW quests always tell you exactly where to go.
Mm-hmm. But it sure was pretty, I'll tell you that. Everything was really pretty. But, yeah, there were a lot of, like, gameplay issues that needed to be worked out. And then they went dark for a whole year. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I did.
To reinvent the game. Who was it? Mighty Games?
Yes.
Yeah, Mighty Games decided they had enough and then sued for their money back.
Nah, it was Codemasters, wasn't it?
Codemasters.
Oh, that's it. That's right.
Mighty Games was Jumpgate Classic. So, yeah, Codemasters decided to sue over it, and then, yeah, that was kind of the beginning of the end.
The thing that I – the vibe that I get out of this game is
– Sorry.
it's almost like EverQuest 1. If there had never been an EverQuest 2 or a World of Warcraft, and the only game in town that ever was EverQuest 1, and it got shut down, and then somebody brought a player server up, but it still kind of looks and plays the same.
It came from that
EverQuest
era. 1.
Oh yeah, right. I found JumpGate because of EverQuest. All my friends were playing EverQuest, and I was like, "Huh, this MMO stuff's kind of cool. I wonder if anybody made an elite version of this." And then I went looking and found JumpGate.
Mark, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say one of the things about JumpGate was the evolution was that it started out being just a dressing up of JumpGate. I mean, they were going to update the game. But then it just kind of snowballed and, they tried to be everything to everyone because JumpGate, the game that we all love is a really skill based game. I mean, and it's not an easy game to play.
Twitch.
And suddenly they said, well, let's make it easy for these ones to play and let's put a damper mode on so the people who don't like the near Newtonian physics so that they can fly. And little by little, they just kind of loaded it up so much with so much crap that it just sunk.
Yeah, I would actually agree with Mark Hambro because, you guys said you've never, haven't shot anybody the first year you play. I played JumpGate just for PvP because there's feeling like JumpGate when, I played all kinds of PvP games, but the combat in JumpGate, the way it's done, it's the only game that gives me the shakes when I kill somebody. And that feeling is actually why I came back, because I've yet to find it. And it's kind of like drugs, Don't have to.
It's an adrenaline rush.
That's true.
Absolutely. The other day, I had my first fights on this new server, and I didn't remember exactly how it felt until I was in the middle of combat, and suddenly just the adrenaline pumped right through me, and it was just, everybody talks about that experience when they're PvPing, but it's just to go after however many years it's been since I last experienced that, I can't remember ever in the few years since experiencing that in any other game that I've played.
Yeah,
you get done and your hand is absolutely shaking.
Oh yeah, the adrenaline
jumping out
dump
just in front of a C-27 will give you the same feeling. Trust me.
Hey, Matthew, were you fighting for real or in the sim?
Oh, I was fighting for real.
God damn it, there's no equipment. Stop it.
It's funny. I don't get that feeling in the sim. When I fight in the sim, it's not nearly the same as when I fight out.
The intensity.
Risk-reward type thing. That makes sense. So I don't know if you know, folks, but when this came back, there's a whole player-based economy where you actually have to take commodities to producers, I think I'm doing, and then the producer stations make the things, like the equipment and stuff. And it's very complicated. Yeah, you have to mine. So a lot of people are mining. And there's still next to nothing out there.
Because very few people are actually
home. When the game came up on the very first day, was it just the stations were there and there's nothing else and no equipment?
No, they pre-stocked.
There's pre-stocked equipment, but it's usually crap.
There were no commodities at all. All the commodities in the stations are that which we mined or got out.
Yeah.
So when I undock out of the Quanta, whatever core station there, the Quantar core, when I undock out of
undock
there,
is Eve. Come on, you launch and jump.
Oh my god!
It's request launch.
Right, but one in three times I crash because it's got a little stability problem. It's right out to the desktop about every third launch. But anyway, so I fly out and I see off to the side of the station, there's these big floating factory things. So were those there or is that something somebody stuck out there already?
No, those were faction missions that we built over, and I do mean a very long time.
Oh, God.
When they resurrected the server, apparently they were already there.
Which is interesting.
Or they placed them. We don't know.
Okay. So then I've also heard
One of the really
I heard other people complaining that POSs, which I assume are player-owned stations, that there's a lot of controversy about whether those are good or not. And I don't understand that because I don't have any background. So why are they a nasty thing?
You're going to start that here.
Because people strip the main stations of stuff, lock their POS so nobody can buy anything, and start stockpiling. Well, it's a real major pain in the butt.
If you're e-commerce, understand the value.
Because, you know, originally, let me finish real quick. Originally, a big part of Jamgate was the interaction of the community. It was the community, everybody knew everybody. There were villains, there were good guys, there were pirates, etc. With player on station, besides the stripping and having a big economic effect on the whole economy within the game, it also has a big effect on community. Because now it's all about one guy in the station and not about, you know, Octavians worrying and stalking their stations for the whole, you know, faction. A lot of people make the argument that it's bad for the community that people are becoming too individualistic and it becomes all about me rather than kind of all about community type of thing.
Yeah, it definitely had that effect when the player-owned stations first appeared in the game. It's just all of a sudden the faction stations were just empty. You didn't see anybody anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was thinking if they had player-owned stations that were open to everybody, then in a sector where there isn't a station, you could put one. But I didn't realize that you could lock it.
No, yeah, like Peter said, you can set permissions so anyone can dock there. I think you can also say it's only like your squad can dock there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then you can set
private with this. Yeah. List.
And you can set it. Yeah, exactly.
I could see it working really well if it was that they took away the ability to lock it, where it was just like, hey, there's no station here. We should have one. And the community comes together and puts one, you know, well, especially in faction warfare. It's like we want to get a station closer to the front line.
Well, the problem with that is, you know, the original battles that we fought, it was, you know, Zol's on the way. We're at Oct Space, and the battles were very intense because of you couldn't just launch and go continuously into the battle. There was strategies involved. With the idea of POS is basically what happened was, you know, one squad launches from DG, which is one sector, another one launches from another sector, and they kill each other until somebody runs out of equipment, and the intensity isn't there because every time you die, you can launch from a POS basically within seconds, as long as it takes you to get back. So that was a big effect on the wars as well because it just became like nobody cared about dying anymore.
Okay, as opposed to coordinating, getting 100 ships, 7 jumps over to where the fight is.
Correct. And like the fights, basically the front lines, they were moving around. You know, we would push Zol's close to wait, but then they have advantage because now they're quicker to launch. And it was kind of like a seesaw with a lot of fighting, with a lot of very intense and coordination. And it became basically, okay, I get killed, I launch again, I get killed, I launch again. Rinse and repeat. And
In that light, I hope they don't put the darn things back in then, because
they're already there. Yeah. Just no one has the money really to buy them yet.
That's not. There's a ton already. There's like 7 in Dark Gateway already.
What?
Yeah.
Sorry, Shonda. What were you going to say?
I was just say, as a community though, if we choose not to play that way, I mean, we can do that.
That's what I'm kind of hoping because
it's a valid complaint, but on the other side, I see the econ workers.
Okay, but
for especially with switching ships, it's a complete pain in the ass. You want to go fight with your faction, but then you got to fucking run around to 17 different stations to find the gear.
You know,
to do that. You know,
that's a nice thought, but the problem is, you know, it only takes one asshole to decide that they're going to start homing out of their POS in Dark Gateway, and then they're right in the perfect strategic location. And they gain a massive advantage because of that. So then,
or you avoid them. Then
respond.
You avoid them.
How?
You go toward like core instead of meeting in Dark Gateway. You try to go the other way.
By the way, folks, you have no idea what the fuck we're talking about, I'm gonna put a link. I'm gonna to put a link to a very handy map of the Jumpgate universe in the show notes, so you could like, you'll hear us mention like Wake and Core and blah blah blah, and be like, oh yeah, okay, oh over there, oh okay, and just keep in mind when you see this map, it's kind of interesting. The distance between the gates in the systems kind of correspond to these lines between the systems. So the shorter a line, the closer the gates are to each other.
Not really, but
aren't they? Map,
I thought, no, I, thought
yeah, no, I don't think so.
I thought nah. they did.
No,
it's a 3D map. You have to turn it to see all the,
nah, see like, the distances.
Was it like Great Venture Belt's like 100,000 between gates or something like that?
Oh,
well,
I'm
the
sorry.
Deep Black Run. Going from OP to Quant Core, there are three gates there that are 50K or more apart. One of them 72K.
Yeah, it's like the same when you go to Aut Core.
But actually, I'd like to say something real quick. I would voice what Reagan, Shonda said. You know, if this game is to survive for a longer time than some of us are afraid, there has to be some community policing. And
yeah. There has to be, because there's not a GM. There's no GMs.
Not yet.
Correct. And, well, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
The problem, though, is that people aren't going to do that. They're always going to take the shortest path to success. If they think there's a win button, they're going to push it, because that's just the way internet gamers are. I mean, yeah, community is great and all, but if somebody thinks they can get a leg up, they're going to take it. So, you know, until we can get the programmers on board and put some upkeep on these stations or something so that they can't just turn them into huge warehouses, it's going to happen.
One of the only reasons.
Well, you just yelled there. You talked about the upkeep. That's one of the things that happened with the stations was when they were first implemented, it was a real bitch to keep them open and operating. I mean, you
yeah, because they were expensive.
To make enough money.
And they should be.
McCloud was the only one who had enough cash.
It should take a squad to keep a station running.
It should take more than a squad.
And it was a direction that Istvan was actually trying to head toward before Gaz did their bullshit.
Yeah, Istvan Gaz was a – you might have seen him on the blog. He does comment every so often. Great guy. He was like the lone programmer on the game, I think, for like years, right?
Yep.
He was like the only one updating it.
Istvan was female, wasn't she?
No.
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 Steve.
Steve. Okay, well, no, I guess not. Well, here's my point about the POSs. The only thing that made them worth having was so that you had a storefront to sell artifacts. That was it.
Mm. Okay, I completely disagree with that, but...
you can't dump them onto the station because they disappear.
Artifacts were an awful game mechanic anyway.
I love artifacts.
I love AB4s, man. How dare you?
Artifacts are like...
They're cracked. Because they're crack when you find one. They're like, ooh, what did I find now? It's something shiny.
Yeah, but the mechanic for finding them was really dumb and poorly implemented.
I loved it. I felt I was exploring.
You like being bored for hours on end? I don't know, man.
That's my
thing. No, forget, you can make those runs real fast.
That's the beauty. That's the beauty of Jumpgate, because there were so many different things, and there were some people that loved going exploring for artifacts. I mean, I never could use artifacts. I died too damn much.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, gone in a minute. Are petal magnets.
But you know what? That's just it about artifacts. That's what makes them terrible is you say you die too often, but you have artifacts, and you're, like, unkillable in the – at least in the Typhoon and in the Intensity. I mean, the
I don't know.
Where they have an equivalent.
I wasn't unkillable in the Typhoon.
Nobody's unkillable. The Quantar Heavy Fighter, by the way.
Yes.
Amazing ship.
But I think what point Ambrose is making, and I completely agree, this is the beauty of Jumpgate, that there are so many different people enjoying very different actions or activities, and we all can coexist and welcome to have a hell of a lot of fun, even though I agree, RDN sucks, but hell, some people like it. More power to them, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
Let's blow them up, Oleg.
Well, you know what? One thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, we were talking about the economy. You know, with the rebirth of the game. And one of the really interesting dynamics that's going on was when this game first started, you know, back in when it was launched in 2001, stations produced their own commodities. So the stuff that you need to build your equipment automatically produced at all the different stations. So you just have to go around this station, that station, the other station, pick up what you need, dump it at the place where you need to produce, and go. Well, now that's done in a very, very limited way, and you have to mine to get all the stuff. So the whole dynamic of starting in an early game scenario has completely changed. You know, this is not the same game. Starting, you know, a month ago in this game was nothing like starting this game in 2001.
Mm-mm. I'm totally fine with that.
I think as a miner, it's tough, but I think it's been very interesting.
Yeah, because
no money, no map farm money.
It's like there's like I think when I last played, there were hundreds and millions and billions of credits floating around between all these players who had mat farmed and sold and stuff.
And mat farm money never went away.
Never. Because once it I hate to say it.
Guys, by the way, what is mat farming? Someone explain it because I don't remember it very well.
Matter converters. Yeah. All the matter converters between one station and another using the dealie with the gave you your best profit. Yeah. So you run them back and forth. And granted, these things were bloody heavy. So you had to get a tow load.
I have an interesting graphic because I used to track all of the station inventories and prices and things like that well before any of the generally available tools came available. And I've got a really interesting graphic of when they implemented the patch to keep matter farms from happening. And you would just see it between Sol Rain Core and Wake, I think it was, and the price for matter converters looked like two sine waves for days. They would strip one station of matter converters completely so that it needed matter converters, and the price
would
slowly
go up.
Climb all the way up. And if anybody landed and put matter converters on the station, as soon as they launched, they were dead.
Mm-hmm.
They guarded
it. I remember that.
And they had these big warnings. They're like, "Do not dump on this station, or we're going to kill you."
I remember that.
And then once the price maxed out, then everybody would sell their matter converters. And
you also had the like the pay or die guys and lots of people who were against matter farming would come and intentionally dump on that station just to fuck it all up for them.
Now, what was better was intercepting the toes in route and knocking them down with their load of matter.
That too, yep.
And that was
that
fun.
Was an expensive loss.
That was the best part of matter farming was knocking those guys out of the sky.
A toe. I just made more money doing the runs for the Morning Stars. I'd go down to Hype, make a buttload of Morning Stars, and then just run between Wake and OP and QC. And
those are missiles,
make big money.
We have a lot of people. Don't forget, folks, we have a lot of people who've never played this before. So while we're throwing out all this terminology, I'm sure there are listeners who are like, what?
Let me explain just real quick. Matter farming was exploiting of economy. Basically, you create artificial demand by stripping the station, having no equipment there, and then you create artificial oversupply at another station by bringing them there. And you just go back and forth, exploiting the economy back then. That's what a lot of people made money, but it did nothing to the economy. It actually hurt the economy, oversupplying the cash, which was one of the biggest problems the game had, was that the cash was just so abundant and inflation rates were just stupid.
That's not a problem right now.
And the only reason they did it with the matter converters is because it was the most expensive commodity in the game. It was like $600,000 a unit. Sure. And so you could only haul 500 units in a tow. So that had the biggest margin. And so that's the commodity they used. It didn't matter what the commodity was. They were just, like he said, creating artificial demand.
Well, then it also.
It was before the super freighter. So
because of its expense as well, it had the lowest price floor and the highest price ceiling.
Yep.
So you could make the most per trip.
Yep.
So for the people who haven't played this game, which I am almost one. I don't have any of this background either. So for the people listening that don't have that, the absolute noob experience is that you log into the game and you've got the tiniest ship, which is almost like a shuttle, and
it is
you
a
got
shuttle.
A mining.
It is
you,
a shuttle.
Okay, so you got a mining laser, right? And
if
you can take missions.
That's quant.
If you're a quant, you have a mining laser.
Yeah, that's only the green guys that get that.
Well, I joined the best team then.
Yeah.
So,
you did.
Yeah.
You did.
So you start out.
Unlike the song, it's very easy being green.
So you've got this mining laser, and it's like, well, now what? So and there's not a whole lot of tutorial. I wouldn't say it's a very noob friendly game unless you have people
not.
In the game
it's
that
not.
Which Reagan does tremendously. As soon as I log in, I get a message from her. Hey, you know, I want to be your mentor, teacher of the game. It's great. And
mentor whoring.
Yeah. So
seriously.
So anyway,
I do help though.
The deal.
She just wants the medal.
But the,
so she's helpful. She is.
But the deal is you take off.
I have messages.
And you fly out, and there's no way to track asteroids or anything. You just see them on the radar, and you have a very tiny radar, right? So, oh, there's an asteroid over there. I'll fly over to it. And then you realize, oh, God, I can't stop. Bam, you crash into it.
That's why you never head directly for an asteroid.
No. Always go at oblique angles. It doesn't matter what you're aiming at.
Yeah, well, I was still trying to figure the keys out and stuff, right? And I'm like, oh my god, it doesn't have brakes. And I realized
it does, but not very good for.
Well, it's basically flying the ships in this is like playing asteroids, right? If you want to go forward, you go forward, and then when you want to stop, you turn 180 and fire the engines and stop
and dump it.
Yeah, and you know, so it's Newtonian in that way. Now there are retro thrusters, but they don't slow you down very quickly. So that's more for maneuvering stuff. When you're inching up to an asteroid, then you can use those to slow down. The other thing that Brian taught me in there is apparently if you orbit the asteroid while you're mining it, it mines much faster. Rather,
oh yeah, that would get
much faster.
Okay,
and
so there's
way later, yeah.
Well, there's a skill thing to this, right? Because this game is hard mode. All right, I can't stress that enough. This game is.
Oh, it is. It got a very steep learning curve.
This game is balls hard. So you get out there, and I'm flying with the mouse, which I actually find is an advantage. I tried it with the joystick; it's more responsive that way. But for the mining that I'm doing, the mouse is the best bet because I can kind of bump the mouse over and find that sweet spot. Where I have enough forward thrust that I'm going toward the asteroid and then I'm turning away from it or actually toward it enough that I'm just in a continuous orbit burning around it.
That's just lazy.
I know.
But don't you feel lame playing a space game with a mouse?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
Some of us can't work. Look, Vista hates joysticks that aren't Logitech. I got news.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
If I get into a fight,
I'm upgrading. Just give me a time.
7, right? Don't go to 8. Just go to 7.
Yeah. Good grief.
Don't go to 8.
You're playing jump kick. Go back to XP.
Yeah, you need a jump. Actually, XP would be an upgrade to Vista.
Yeah, still using 95.
It really would be, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
But you know, we're talking about how hard it is to fly in jump kick, and it is a steep learning curve. But it's also the most awesome thing about the game.
Well,
because
the reward,
once you get it, it's awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the reward there is great, and it's a thing where you have to think a lot about what you're doing. It's not like you just chase a target around. You know, if there's maneuvering, you know, I could assume that like a lot of dogfights turn into turn fights where
they're jousting matches.
Yeah,
there's two styles of fighting. Yeah,
well,
there's jousting and there's circle fighting, and they're not the same.
No, they're not.
And I think what you said kind of hits on the point, one of the biggest problems of the game, and that's one of the biggest good things of the game, is the amount of skill that is involved in this game. For a person that starts anew without any kind of help from a friend, like Brian was trying to help you a little bit, it's very easy to get turned off on this game. Because it is very skill-based. I would say it's completely skill-based. But for us that we went through all this new stuff and we paddled 100 times and we did a lot of stupid things.
And We still paddle.
I had deaths. One of them was death to another player.
You should explain what pedaling is. I know what it is now.
Oh, pedaling is the jump gates have four pedals around them, kind of making a triangle.
Octahedrals.
Yeah. pylons.
Yeah, and basically, you basically don't want to aim right for the center of the jump gate because you might not see the pedal on the other side of the big glowy ball, and you might just slam right into
it. Yeah, if you don't hit the space bar in time, you come out the other side of the gate.
The joystick, your thrower forward thrust, if you don't cut your throttle, you go flying in the pedal when you get...
Oh, on the other side.
That's you got to cut the throttle as soon as you jump, folks.
You know, I totally forgot about that because I do it out of habit.
I do too now.
But to finish my point, what you were saying about this, you know, and how hard it is to learn, to us, that is the best thing about the game because, again, like for me, and I pretty much do PvP, like good people, good players at PvP, like Lee at Al Gore and whoever else I'm not naming, they're all going to get offended now.
Whoa, Sephiroth, come on.
So, not just about your aim, even though those guys have amazing aim, but it's about controlling your ship, doing that tight circle. Because if you try to joust one of them, which is the easier way of doing, just going straight at them, you're going to get on. So it's about controlling the physics. It's about controlling the ship. And it's about basically maneuvering in this amazingly physics model, which basically what it really makes the difference between people who are good at PvP and people who are mediocre at it. The difference is great because all those mechanics. And that's scary.
That doesn't even touch on the other piece, which is the situational awareness thing. When you're in a big battle, you know, knowing who's around you, knowing who's coming towards you, knowing when to disengage and how to disengage. Mm. I mean, it's just so much that goes into it. But like once again, it's you know, it's just a rush once you get it.
That's exactly like Oleg and Mark were just saying. When you're talking about jousting or circling, that's strictly in a one versus one situation, more or less. You get a little bit of that in team fights, but generally it's somebody calls a target and everybody or a group of people chase that target. And for the person that's targeted, they need to know how to fly and they need to be aware of where everybody is. And the people who are making the decisions also need to be aware of the situation entirely. And that is a very difficult skill to learn.
Well, and the game's not particularly friendly about letting you know what ships are in space around you. You can see them on the radar, but then you have to actually go through the target list.
You highlight them.
Yeah, so you have to go through the target list one ship at a time to see what it is, and there's no labels on that, and I found that kind of scary. And then so then the other thing that I found was that there's no lateral thrusters on the ship. There's only the main engines in the back. So if you need to adjust position or anything, you actually have to turn the ship. There's no side slipping.
Changing delta V.
That's what it's called. The button on my joystick that cycles through targets is almost dead because I just constantly slammed it through team fights.
Yeah. Now, one other thing that I wanted to talk about, too, is and what I ended up setting up today is that what's that thing called, the rotor?
Rotocall.
Yeah, the rotocall. Okay, so you have to have a separate program that you run in the background, and it puts an interface.
You don't have to have that.
No, that's what that pad next to your computer is for.
Oh, my God, I cut my wrist.
I'm telling you, there are ways around it, but the JG Rot Pro makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, so
that didn't exist when the rotocall first came out.
No, not a clue.
We had to actually write shit down on pads.
Well, what it does is it gives you down at the bottom of the screen the three coordinates of where you are in space in the sector. So, like, currently I'm at 17.5, negative 24.5, and negative 33.5. So if I find a nice juicy asteroid right there, I write those coordinates down. And then you can do a slash command in the game to set a waypoint to those coordinates so I know how to fly back there. But the only way to know is if I wrote it down. So I could find something like that and share it with my friends. Well, what this program does is it actually puts that database accessible in the game, and people can share the database amongst each other.
I'll love that.
Yeah, and so that's pretty neat. But the process of that is, like, all the rare asteroids appear to be hidden out way out beyond radar range.
What is
so,
50K from you mean zero gates?
Do you mean the pures?
Well, just whatever's.
I don't know, like the precious and everything. It's all way out.
Oh, they're way there. 100,000,
70, 80K out from the zero gate.
Well, it's like I selected one that was close, right? And I had to fly 15 minutes at top speed to get out there. And then,
well, you're a noob.
Yeah, and then
and I, just wait until just wait until you fill up after, and it takes you even longer to fly back.
Longer to come back.
Well, then, but yeah, you know the database that I've got's out of date, so I flew out there and there was nothing. So, and I got on the chat to Regan and I was like, God damn it, database you put up on Dropbox is bullshit.
You know? Yeah,
well, that's the database that we give to noobs. That's why. That's you know,
that's
the planet yet. You got a flood planet.
Yeah. Wait, do you get to a field that's all glowing blue?
That's bad. Now, just going back just real quickly about how Twitch-based this game is as opposed to skill-based. I mean, I want to use those terms for one reason. Somebody back in the day, and I can't remember who it was, had the SIG file for his forum, had a picture of a joystick, and said, I got your skill points right here.
I remember that.
I want to expand on that, because if people haven't played the game, you should know that skill is all you. Like, you don't gain achievement points for logging in for 9,000 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, any skill you have in this game is because you yourself have written down on a notepad and paper with pencil, or you have memorized, or you have learned and practiced. And, I mean, like, PvPers, you don't become a PvPer overnight. You spend hours in the sim with other players trying to learn how to circle or...
I don't even want to think about the amount of hours I've spent just trying to learn how to speed dock.
I still dock like grandma.
You know, yeah, we're sitting here and we're talking about all the skill stuff, and people are going to listen and think, oh, crap, I don't want to play that game. But the great thing about Johnny is that you come in and the community is so great. People will teach you stuff. They will go in the sim and they'll show you stuff. They'll help you get equipped. They'll give you a little bit of extra cash. There's a lot of, you know, there's no official, you know, tutorial, but there's a lot of people who've played a long time who are willing to share, you know, their experience and the things that they've learned.
Well, that's Mark touched on something that I did want to bring up is that the community, I've been in a few other MMOs and the community for Jumpgate has always been the fucking best.
Yeah,
you may not like all of us, but you do appreciate us being there.
I love you all, and if I hate you, I at least respect you. That's
we're a big family.
But we know it's a niche game. I mean, if the community isn't like that, it's just going to kill itself. So it's a survival instinct.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, if the community dies, it was Odisha's fault.
He's back, by the way. He logged in today.
Excellent.
Speaking of people who you would like to come back for the older people here, if you had one person to bring back, who would it be? Who hasn't shown up?
Ratty.
Righteous.
Bring back Ratty.
I would go with either, he goes by many names, Zaltis, Nick Cater, Hater. I can't remember what his soul account was. Easily the most fun guy I've ever flown with and probably the best pilot I've ever seen in Drumgate. That guy, he just knew how to get the most out of every ship he flew. It was unbelievable.
I want Gossip back.
Oh,
there you go.
He was going to come back. I heard he was going to come back. He may get under a different name. Who knows?
I have a bounty on him. I'm saying somebody gets cookies. Somebody finds me Gossip.
I don't remember.
I would like Solid to come back because I want to see the EEA come back to life.
Oh, to hell with those people. even though my World of Warcraft guild leader is an EEA guy, I still don't like him.
I'd also like to see Ridgeway make a return and bring back the ISU.
I barely remember names, so it's funny. When I see a name I recognize, I'm like, oh, my God, you're back. Oh, my God, you're back. But I don't remember like names otherwise.
Well, a lot of the guys like Hurricane and Fiddler and Winken used to be members of my squad back in the day.
And which squad was that? Remind
that
me.
Was the Merchants Alliance. We were
okay,
there.
Okay, I remember the Merchants Alliance.
And one of my members picked a fight with me one night the day after I had the same day I had a root canal. So I kind of went ballistic in Battlecom. The pain meds were wearing off. I was not a happy person. And all of a sudden, I lost half my squad in 24 hours. But I am so proud of what those guys did after that. They became Mac.
I was in Mac for a while. I think Mac was might have been my longest squad, either that or just Brotherhood.
Yeah. Well, Mac was cool just because, you know, they were – that was a classic example of community policing because they were the guys who were hauling everything around and keeping all the equipment flowing. That's and right. You just didn't screw with Mac because if you screwed with Mac, everyone would be on your ass.
And they did have enough combat pilots that would put you in a pod quick.
Yeah, that's what happens, folks. When you get shot down, you don't die. You lose all your equipment and you get flown in a pod back to your home station.
And some money.
And some money.
Do you have to wait on the pod to fly there?
No, it's instantaneous.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, they could just make that game, it could make it just that little bit more grievous kick in the nuts to the noob if you actually had to wait an hour.
Eve does that.
Yeah.
No.
Which is another piece of evidence that Eve hates its players, basically. Eve just hates its players. So
people are making way too much money to hate their players.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, there's still niche, too, in the grand scheme of things. Just not as niche as this one.
Those of us, some of us, when Jump Gauge started to die off, instead of going to EVE, we went to a game called Earth and Beyond.
That didn't last very long either.
Like no, Space Broccoli.
That's another one of those EA people. Go on.
Yeah, that was
Best Westworld. Game Company.
Wasn't it Westworld who did that one?
Yeah, but the EA bought Westwood.
Well, yeah, right. I was just saying it was Westwood that did that one.
Hey, guys, bring the conversation real quick back to JumpGate, and I want to emphasize what Ambrose just says because this is extremely important to what happens to JumpGate next, is that if you're one of those people that suffered through this podcast and you never played JumpGate, don't be afraid to come and try.
No, come on down. We'll help you.
We will help you. Again, the community will be there for you. Ask us. There are always people like Craig and like Ambrosius, like me to some extent. I'm not
a fiddler.
But we will help you. We will teach you. We will show you what this game can be. And I can effing guarantee you it will be the best game, especially it will be the best space sim you ever played. There is nothing like that.
It really isn't. And folks, it's free now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's free. I mean, when it was running, they charged $10 a month. And now the people in Russia, whoever they are, who run the thing, they won't even take donations.
Yeah, no. What's the story?
Because that would leave a paper trail.
They don't want a paper trail.
So we really don't. What is the story? I only know a
nobody
bit of it.
Knows and nobody knows. Asks.
Nobody knows.
I don't
and
think we're going
to know. To know. We just want our game.
Magic and voodoo.
That's right. Don't ask, don't tell.
So who actually owns the rights to this?
Gazillion.
Gazillion, yeah.
Nobody really knows that either.
And there were a couple of people who tried to buy the rights off of them, too, but they wanted some insane amount of money.
Well, so actually, I was involved when the game first shut down. I talked with Gazillion and was trying to get them to release the rights. But, of course, at the very beginning, they were still in a lawsuit with Codemasters, and that was causing a problem. And then they had issues with, they couldn't let it go open source because there was proprietary tools that were built into the code, or at least this is what they told me. David Brevik had said that they had to release it in a way, if they were ever going to do it, that it was released to a person or a group or whatever. It couldn't just be made open source. And, and then that just kind of frittered away and, they just stopped talking to us.
I can't believe that there's still anything left in the code that's proprietary
If you look at the credits page.
Proprietary 1999 code, yeah, right.
Yeah. If you look at the credits page, there's several third-party libraries and whatnot that are built into the game.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. What about those companies? Can you get maybe a waiver from them and say, hey,
if they exist.
I'm sure it has been tried.
Yeah.
Well, the bottom line is, it's back now for however long, and whoever's listening, come play. you know,
come play.
Yeah. Make the proper sacrifices.
Yeah, we don't know how long it's gonna be around.
No, we don't. But we're happy.
You need to know that F5 is how you chat. You hit the F5 key and then you type. That's the first thing you need to know.
Then just say help. Yeah. Or something like that. It's
right.
Somebody will speak up. If you give, no, don't just scream help. You gotta say, I need help with.
I was kidding.
Somebody will speak up.
And make sure your resolution in game is equal to or less than the resolution of your desktop, or you will CTD.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
even if you don't, you're probably going to CTD.
Well, yeah,
from time to time.
What was that, Mark?
Just don't stay in station too long.
Is that where the memory leak is? Spending time on station?
Yeah, 2D to 3D.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Mark? I'm sorry.
No, I was just kind of reinforcing what Reagan was talking about, the resolution matching, and it is an old game, and you know, some people find, depending upon what your system is, you know, you may have to run it in some compatibility mode, and it might take a little bit of tweaking to get started, but it is you know, something that you can work through fairly quickly, and it's worth you know, that little bit of that.
If you got an old XP computer, now's the time to drag it out.
Yeah, I was going to say that's. That's kind of the one advantage of it being such an old game. Yeah, it has its problems as a result, but it also runs on, like, anything.
Everything.
You could run it on a fucking toaster, probably, if you try.
Somebody posted, what, today, that he's been playing it on a bloody iPad.
What?
Yes. Well, no,
he was remote displaying it from a Mac to his iPad. He wasn't playing it on.
How was he running it on his Mac? How was he running it on his Mac? Tell me
That's a good question. Yeah. So he's running it emulated on the Mac, remotely displaying to an iPod and playing it.
An iPod. That's pretty amazing, actually.
Jesus Christ.
Well, you'd never, don't ever misunderstand, underestimate a gamer and his game, buddy. We will go to great lengths just to play. One of the things she forgot to mention, though, is the compatibility issue. Switch it to Service Pack 2 for XP. It should be okay. Along with the resolution.
I run Win 7 and I don't have to do anything fancy. I just had default settings and played the game.
I'm on Windows 7.
Depends on your graphics card and a lot of other things.
Yeah, I'm on 64-bit Win 7.
There's a lot of community in-game help that helps out with this. And then it's what's the form? Joystick required, right? Is the official?
Yes.
Official unofficial.
Unofficial. Yeah.
The unofficial amazing place where you can get a lot of awesome info and talk to a lot of awesome people. It's joystick required. That'll also be in the show notes.
A lot of resources too for like JG Rock Pro and HUDs and all that kind of stuff.
Can you use the HUDs? Like I heard they will crash the game because they do some kind of file size check.
No, HUDs.
Not HUDs.
No.
I just pulled out the old disc.
If you go swapping the other graphics, like for asteroids or ship skins and things like that, that will cause the game to not run.
Yeah, which is too bad. I think it was Dicebar created a bunch of new skins for the Quant ships that looked so much better. And, of course, because of the fact that you could also make it a lot easier to see people, they had to fix that little issue. And but the ones that Dicebar created were amazing, and it really was a disappointment that they couldn't come to some agreement to get those in the game.
Yeah, I actually did the same sort of thing, went through and made some really high resolution textures and whatnot for ships and stations and stuff. And they looked really good, but you can only use them offline. As soon as you tried to connect to the server, it's like, nope, sorry.
Did you guys notice, like, I thought this was funny because I'm running in 1920, I think. And if you look like to the side, the graphics for the cockpit just stop.
Yes, they do. There's a line there.
Yeah. It's like, oh, look, open space.
I'm 14.4 by 9. I've seen it.
That's, I'm in 1080p, but I always, the first thing I do when I launch is turn off the cockpit because it just gets in my way.
I usually do too, but turn it on and like look to the left or the right and you'll see what we're talking about. It's actually it's pretty goddamn funny.
I just pulled out the old disc, and I've got some of this old stuff. I think I've got some HUDs here that I'll put up, but a couple of them are the old Jumpgate peripherals, and I'm wondering how many of these are any good, I wonder. Like, I've got JG Tracker 1.3, JG Paths.
That's
if it connects to the old Josh site, it's not going to work.
Yeah,
you can change
that. You
could probably go into the code of the thing and change the URL. It draws the data from.
Well, yeah, that's how we're getting JG Rap Pro to work.
Yeah.
People have manipulated
you, if you edit your host's file, then Josh.
The other issue is going to be getting it to run on a modern PC as well. I mean, you know, look how much trouble we have with JumpGate. These are all old programs. They might be simpler, but it doesn't mean that they will just run out of the box, right?
Well, that's probably true.
Some of them use DLL hacks to snoop the network stream as well, so they may not even be compatible at the same time.
But honestly, I never used anything but the client. I live quite fine, so I don't want anybody to think that what we're talking about is the game.
Yeah, I think as a PvPer, it's easier to ignore third-party tools. It's when you're doing econ stuff that you need all those extra tools.
Exactly.
Hey, and we got our new tools for Opti's. You get Opti, you get all these fancy features where you can see your enemies on the map.
Really?
They have the beacons tuned or something?
Yeah, they'll show up on the radar. You'll see however many, like, red dot and ring view if your beacon's flipped in ring view. Or even if you have, like, Dark Gateway flipped, you hit your Opti command in the map, you can see, oh, there's a Sol and an Oct in Dark Gateway, you know? It's really cool.
Can you explain the flipping beacons thing? Is that on the map as the sectors turn to your team's color? Is that because the beacon got flipped?
Yes.
Yeah, you fly through it, and there's one in all the non-station sectors.
But you have to have the BCU mounted in order to tune it, and you have to be flying the right tags in order to tune it. Mm. So,
if it's gray ones,
anybody can flip.
Yeah.
But yeah, the beacons untune after 4 hours and they go gray, and then no faction controls that beacon. Just for anybody listening that isn't aware of this. And then when they've been tuned, you need to be flagged for PvP in order to tune the beacons.
Military.
So what advantages do you get?
You get XP and credits, man. The more people on the server, the more you get.
And you do get them even if you log off.
It also expands your so F1 is your faction chat. I think it expands the sectors that are flipped to your faction. You can use F1.
Oh, so you can be out of you can be out of communication range to the rest of your
right. Like, it's like if you're in AUX space and the beacons are all red, then you can't use faction chat. But if the beacons have been flipped green, you can. I believe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. So basically, if the faction chat works in every sector with the color of your faction,
right? But it also reduces your tax rate the more beacons are flipped to your color.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was the original use for them, and you know the XP and the money's kind of cool, but it's not very much. You know,
it's more now though than it used to be.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because it used to be like 300 credits per tick or some belief.
It fluctuates with server population.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So, right now is an awesome time to be flipping beacons.
I flipped two coming back from QC earlier.
So what I'm learning here is that you guys played this game for 10 years and you still don't know everything.
That's right. Or we've forgotten things.
We did forget a lot of stuff. Well,
yeah, that too.
Istvan came back for a while. He was taken off of that stupid JumpGate Evolution put back on JumpGate Classic. So, you know, we implemented a bunch of stuff in that time that he came back from when Gazillion took over. And a lot of the old players had already quit the game by then.
Yeah. Correct.
So it depends on what vintage you are as to what rule set you remember.
Right.
Yeah. That's an excellent way of putting it. Now.
That is an excellent way of putting it.
Yeah, it used to go up to C10, right?
Yeah,
C10. C0 to C10, and there are no C0s anymore.
No.
Yeah, I know. I complained to Reagan about that. Apparently it's her fault.
Yep, sorry.
But yeah, the C0 and C1, C2, those are all the AI that fly around in the game and try to kill you.
Yeah.
Squeeze. No,
the higher the number, the more lethal they are.
They're all some type of fish.
Now it goes up to the 20s and 30s, right?
I think 27 is the top.
27.
29 if you count the pink stingray.
So how does this work? Because I've seen those things. They're like pink monsters that show up.
Yeah.
And you'll get occasional radio messages that like a swarm has entered this sector or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So
that means don't go to that sector.
Yeah. Stay away from those of the noobs.
I launched out of Quant Core in the middle of a swarm. I didn't even look at the map.
Oh no.
I was still in my shuttle. I was like, ah! I died like in 3 seconds.
I did the same thing. I barely managed to speed duck before I was at like 5 armor or something like that. It was ridiculous.
and that's only because you were experienced. If you were that zero chance.
Yeah, exactly. I knew what I was doing.
Figured out you'd be dead.
Well, I've only got 2 kills since I've been back. One was to a swarm, and the other one's to a petal. I was too busy chatting, and I'm going to use the J key on the keyboard for jumping, and I'm chatting, and I forget to hit enter. J.
J, boom.
Boom.
Damn it.
It was fun the other day. Some quants were up in Aux Space and they had docked at Aux Core and they got somebody splashed the station message and we were all on voice comms, started making fun of stupid Aux for splashing the station. And then it was like 5 minutes later, King, one of the quant pilots, said, "Watch out for that Roid," right as he was about to crash into the Roid.
What's the name of that one legendary asteroid that everyone's crushed?
Emma.
It was moved.
Emma
no,
Roid.
What? The color, didn't they?
No, it was moved out of the flight path.
It was moved.
Freaking kidding me.
They changed the color and they moved it.
That's bull.
Yep. Okay, guys, this was an asteroid that was in the middle of 2 gates and it was black.
It was black. That's
and
right.
And you couldn't see it. You know, if you head to the gate, you couldn't see it.
Her name was Emma.
And her name was Emma, and she raped many of us.
Yeah, Emma Roid, the painting.
Who named her?
I have no idea.
You could not make up without smacking into Emma at least once.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a rite of passage. You know, like, was it on naval ships when new sailors pass the equator for the first time, they have like a celebration or something?
Yeah, a gold earring.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's like a rite of passage if you splash.
Well, Emma. I've always got after that. I always go the back way to hide. I don't
want to fucking even deal with Emma.
So when I was in ISU, I did a little bit of the hauling for them, and I was bringing a bunch of gear up from Hyperial to Great Barrier Rift Station.
Morning Stars.
Yeah, Morningstars and what's the engine? The Oxys, the Dream or something?
Yeah, the Dream.
Yeah, so I had like a few things like this, like just a loaded. I can't remember if it was a tow or freighter at this point. Yeah, I had a lot of money invested in this trip, and on the way there, when I was empty, it was all good, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I got to remember Emma," and I didn't hit her. On the way back, smash! Ever since then, I do not go that way.
That was always go the back way.
That was the worst feeling. You're cruising along, fully loaded in your tow, and then all of a sudden you see Emma, and you're like, "Oh yeah, damn it!" And so you have to change vector and thrust and hit the flash fire and do everything you can to try to change vector fast enough so that you don't hit it. You
in
would
a
just
fully
scrape
loaded
by
cargo ship. Yeah.
And the worst part is now you've completely changed vector and there's no way you're getting on the gate.
Yeah. So
you're
going to
be an hour. You're going to be an hour getting out of that sector.
Well, I smashed into it, and because I was in ISU and we hauled with honor guard types, which meant we were flagged for PvP, I had like half the squad escorted me. So I wasted everybody's time. There's like 15 or 20 of us.
How big was this asteroid?
It was big.
It was big.
It was big.
You couldn't just.
So it was like a small moon.
Gingerly.
No, it wasn't quite
that's
that big.
No moon.
Yeah, it was decent size, but it wasn't huge.
When you're heavy, you can't maneuver, so
you just
had to ride it in.
So that's another thing that I've noticed about this game is you only have one ship. So it's not like I'm going to go dock and then switch to my fighter. It's like
that's what the POS is for.
If you have a player-owned station with a hangar, you can have multiple ships. But hangars cost lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
$75 million.
Oh my God!
Well, I'll take what 10 minutes.
Well, I'm noticing too. Like on the station, I don't have any storage, So if I wanted to take my mining laser off and then put guns on, then I have to sell the mining laser.
You got to go to Depot.
Yeah, you got to go to Depot.
So there's one particular station that you can actually switch out equipment on.
Yeah, uh-huh. If you're a quant, yes.
What's your experience plus something?
That was the first faction mission we got, was the building of the depot.
That's right.
And buddy, we busted our asses on that thing.
The soul
got theirs up like half an hour before the ox did or the quants did. I've actually got screenshots of the parade.
Oh yeah, those faction missions were crazy. You would have people on station brokering stuff, that you know, gear that people couldn't buy because they weren't high enough level, and so somebody else would buy it for them so that their ship was fast enough to haul the stuff in time.
That's it.
Yeah, it was you know, more of that whole community thing that was just has always been so great.
I remember spending whole weekends doing those faction missions.
Oh, so if I'm not high enough level to buy, say, a certain set of engines, but my ship can fit them, I can have a higher level player buy it for me?
Yes, that's called brokering.
That's called brokering. But it's not insured. It's not insured, so if you crash, you will not get any money for that equipment.
Mm.
But
generally, you didn't pay for it anyway.
Talking about the community, is that a lot of folks, when they broker you stuff, they won't ask for anything. They just say, here, have fun. That's what I've always done.
But don't forget, you can't just get engines. You might need a better power plant, too.
So what?
You might need a better capacitor.
So what's my arc in this going to be? Because currently I'm at Quant Core, and I go out and find a rock and mine it, and I'm just getting commons, right? I'm level 7 now. And beyond that, like, what am I looking at doing? At what point do I get some guns and go kill?
My recommendation, if you want good XP and some fairly decent money, mm-hmm. take that bloody mining laser off, fill up your cargo, do cargo runs between your stations or even somebody in other faction. That way you can get PR for both and do those. I did my first 12 levels with nothing but cargo runs.
I disagree.
Continue working on your Quantar PR. You could do it by mining the roads you're doing now, or you could do transports. I always kept my mining laser on because you can do more than one mission at once. I would run a transport from like Tripoint to Depot, and before I would dock at Depot, I would mine. And so when I dock, I would get credit for the transport mission, but then I would take a mining mission for Depot. And there's always a common one, so I would sell it. So it was basically two missions in one.
I think that's what I'm going to be doing for a while, chilling out in one sector all day.
Plus, what you can do is when you're mining, if you mine, especially if you mine like semi-fluxers or you mine precious, they give you, you know, kind of equal quantities of a couple of different types of ore. You know, once you get to like a level 12, you can basically fill up your hold, go back, and in one dock do two, and sometimes even if you're lucky, three missions.
That's
I was doing that with common even in the breeze, because I'd get about 0.1 I think units of radioactive and 0.1 of ice from my common, so I would just keep those in my cargo because it wasn't taking up anything, and one unit clears a mission, so I would just keep those in there and it would accumulate, and then eventually I could do more than one mining mission.
Yep. And it goes back to the whole thing. It's like, what turns you on? If you really like shooting stuff, then go kill flux. You know, once you get up to a light flight, a fighter, you can kill, you know, you can kill snails. You can kill,
lots of things. Like sea
mantis.
Nautilus.
The light fighter you get at level 9, the Cyclone, holy shit, that thing is fun to fly.
Yeah. You can kill Nautiloids in the gust.
Okay. Yeah, in the gust, you can start killing things in the gust right away.
Oh, the gust is one of my favorite ships.
That's the
level 2 ship, I believe.
Yeah.
Level 3.
It's like an engine in a seat.
Yeah, but so maneuverable, too. It's so maneuverable.
That ship was disgusting when you had our Arties in it.
Oh, my God. I had an Artied up Vader, and that thing was pretty disgusting, too.
I had the Artie Tensity with the Nova. Oh,
the Vader's just disgusting in general because of the profile.
I know. It's like flying a dish.
It's like, yeah.
So whenever
my favorite Vader story was when me and a bunch of my old squad mates created a new squad, and it was one of the guys who hasn't played in forever. His name was Revenant, and he came up with this idea that we make all of our names look almost identical. And it was 1011, and then one of the other ones was replaced by an L.
Yep.
And we had, I guess we had six guys flying.
Something like that.
And they called us the Bits. And the whole idea was that you couldn't tell us apart, so you could never call out targets. And we all flew Vaders.
How did I never know you were the Bits?
Yeah.
How did I never know that? What the fuck?
That's awesome, though.
It was me, Spork, Single Shot, Revenant, Silk Death, Scalia, and we were the Bits.
You guys actually pretty good in those Vaders. I remember having a lot of fun trying to kill you, and wasn't that easy?
Oh, it was great fun, and we had a whole rules of conduct set up. Like, we didn't attack anyone, and we didn't talk to anyone. We all stayed in character, and we all had to carry one unit of Conflux biomass at all time in the hold, and we just did this whole thing, and we always flew in perfect formation. Like, if you ever watched, you know, we'd all be on the same plane, and it was a hoot. And that was, like, again, this is another thing that you can do with Jumpgate. I mean, you can create all kinds of bizarre role plays and do different things. I mean, we did a lot of stuff, created a lot of role plays. Spork was a great role play guy.
Yes,
and,
he was.
What the hell was the guy he had set up?
The broker guy.
Yeah.
And, are you talking about?
It was like an Oct or something.
Yes, he was an Oct. And we would run all of our role plays through him. And, you know, he would, you know, secretly communicate with different people and set things up. And he would just be a double agent.
Are you talking about the guy that set up the, like, the Hyperial stories?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was
Spork. Spork?
He helped us when I led the HSO squad. Because I remember communicating with him.
I didn't realize that.
Cool stuff.
Anybody here?
There are many men behind the curtains around here.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody remember Innominate?
Oh, yeah.
He had a quote that I wrote them down every time I came across one, but it was one of the funniest I ever saw. And it says, if a newbie hits a roid and nobody's online, does he still bitch on F5?
Of course he does.
Yeah, of course he does.
He's a noob. He doesn't know nobody's on F5.
Does he even know how to use F5?
Yeah. Right? F5, you can chat in space, kids.
F5 is your friend.
And that was the other thing that happened all the time at Jumpgate is, you know, somebody would get shot down, and then the first thing that happened is they would whisper to you and say what a great fight it was.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people are very obliging as far as that's concerned. You know, it was like, okay, fine, I died, no big deal. But thank you for a good fight.
Thanks for the good fight. That's right.
And it's like that in Sim, especially like today. Somebody's like, you guys are all so friendly. We're like, we're just polite people.
Well, you know? Not to be.
The thing about it, like, Amber is talking about roleplay. I used to lead the gang, and we were basically the pirates. And, you know, most of the people we pirated, we had pretty good relations. Well, a few kind of hated us, but we still kill them. But in the end of the day, we all cared about the game, and, you know, we didn't save anybody, and people knew that if you go in on rag, there is a risk.
It's your ass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I remember Andy, the New Dawn guys. They love running in unregulated, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where all the big fucks were.
Yes, sir. And those are the guys, I think it was Falcon who taught me how to fight in Neil.
And you want to, here's a good example too, New Dawn and ISU, they both based out of GBS, and ISU had their 50,000 credit docking fee, but because it was New Dawn, we just gave them a pass, and, you know, if they used the equipment there, which they didn't use much of except for maybe flash fires, but that was okay by us, and it was just like they were guys, they were
not necessarily people that we were allies with, but we weren't going to do anything to them because we respected them. Yeah, exactly. And we had great respect for New Dawn.
And back in the day, flash fires were multi-use. I loved that. They refueled every time you docked. I loved it.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Single use and I got mad.
Flash fires are like extra afterburners.
Mm. They're like extra lives.
That's pour the panther piss, too.
Oh, I just remember it was Fence. It was Fence that was
yeah, that's what it was.
Yep. Guy.
Yeah, I remember.
And Spork flew Fence most of the time. I mean, the others of us took turns, you know, when it was convenient. But, yeah, we used Fence a lot.
I had a thought. Like, one of the great things about Junkyard, like, I ran OMC was Octavian. And then Dogzilla really wanted me in my squad. So he turned it into an econ squad. And then kind of stuck me with it because he went off to play Eve. But anyway.
No hitters there.
We did awesome
jobs. Dogzilla's one of my old people.
When, with our squad, like, I got along really well with GM Kronos. So Kronos we'd set up bids and stuff and we'd get, like, contracts. So we had, like, you know, we are the reason that if you go to Hyperial and you're making your Morning Stars, instead of getting one for tick, you get six. Because we did, like, basically our squad did, like, an FM, which required us to take, you know, like, 20,000 units of uranium to a POS and 20,000 units of iridium to a PS and 10 of every UC artifact. Like, it was ridiculous, the shit that he made us do because you
I forgot about
like
that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, but what was great, though, is, yeah, we did have bullies in the game, lack of a better word, the pirates and all that, but we could get the naps, pay you $10 million, and you leave us alone for a few weeks. Awesome. Like, that was so great. Like, the willingness of, yeah, you want us to rip everybody, but if you pay me money, I will refrain from
it. I mean, realistically, most pirates, when they were, like, doing pay or die type piracy, they weren't asking for much money. Pirate squads made their money through naps primarily.
50K was nothing. You know, 50K or we'll pod you. You know, okay.
Well, once the game got rolling anyway, the 50K was nothing.
Yeah.
When we were noobs, 50K was a mint.
Yeah. My ship like costs more than that, less than that.
It feels like a lot right now. That feels like a lot.
50K is like a lot right now.
Oh, man. I remember the days in beta, flying cargo in beta when Rolio was flying around killing all the cargo pilots and whatnot. And we didn't want to pay him. We didn't want to pay him. No, we tried to fight him. And yeah, I'm not paying you.
No.
Oh, damn, I'm dead.
Him. The whole squad came out. And we tried to kill him. If you're looking at the map, the Quant station on the lower left
corridor.
Tri-point. We tried to kill him for like over 2 hours. He was running back and forth between corridor and the other one, and hot docked every single time through a hail of gunfire and never got touched.
Yeah, he's one of the first people to ever do the whole speed docking thing. And he might not have been the best ever in Drumkeep because it was one of the first people weren't used to it.
Yeah, he was the best. He was the best during his time. That was for sure.
So exactly.
So what do you do? Just come full speed and power slide into the hole.
It was back before you had to drop below 90 to get in the dock. They up until what? How long did we get that for? Because people were docking at 200 or higher. Okay, yeah, it was, and then they stopped that hot dog crap by, you know, making it so you had to drop below 90.
Or he still did it, though.
Yeah, he would run the borderline.
You drop right next to the docking port, and you reverse, you hit zero, and you're right there, and then you just, you know, slide into the port.
Well, no, there's a video out on YouTube somewhere of somebody coming into Amonanth really hot, and they don't stop. They just basically spin around, burn in the other direction until they get to about 99 and then slide in the hole. It's the damnedest thing you've ever seen.
There's very few people that have perfected it to that point, but that's the general idea, yeah.
Well, but the problem is the penalty for not getting it right is death.
You get to bong the station.
And that's why, you know, like I said earlier, I spent, like, I can't count the number of hours I spent in the sim just practicing that, trying to get better at it, because it's, you know, you're in a big team brawl outside of Outpost Station or whatever, and you need to dock because you're almost dead. It can make the difference between, you know, you guys all going home or you guys sticking around to fight a little bit longer.
Yeah, I got pretty good at sliding through the beacons, but I never did perfect the sliding dock like that.
And beacons are actually smaller.
Are they?
Yes.
But there's no speed limit. That's the thing.
There's no speed limit.
They haven't changed.
But the hole is actually smaller. Not by much, mind you, but it is smaller.
They should have incorporated racing into the game where they just have like a set of rings.
I mean, it isn't built into the game, but we made it happen.
Yeah, they were player run events. Somebody would put up a purse. There'd be a start and an end, and it'd be full contact racing.
I ran the gumball rally between Am and Hype.
Yeah,
through Unreal.
You did the beer run, and you had to steal beer from the other players. And if they stole your beer, then you had to go back and get beer. Like Clash of Souls.
I heard about
like that
one. Never saw it, but I heard about it.
And then there was one where you had to kill somebody. You had a home out of Hyperiol, and you had to kill somebody.
You can't home out of Hyperiol.
Or not Hyperiol, the Clutch is old, I'm sorry. So it was all stocked, and we all had to run toes, and you had to run, like, 500 beer. Yeah, that's what it was, 500 beer in toes, and you had to kill somebody.
I was like...
Oh, God.
In a toe. It's not as hard as it sounds.
No.
I don't know which of the GMs came up with it, but I always, or if maybe it was a player idea, I forget, but the Kill the Flag event or whatever.
That was great.
I never heard of no, that. Must
we
have
did
been
that during time. The Weekends of War.
Yeah, the first one wasn't. The second time we did it was during one of the Weekends of War.
That was
and,
so fun.
I don't remember fully how it worked, but you chose like one person to be the flag and everybody else had to escort them and you like set up decoys and all sorts of stuff and you could send people from your team to go and attack and try and take down the other flag, so they had to start over. I think they had to go to like three stations and have whoever confirm that they had done it.
I remember that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Didn't the flag have to fly a specific ship too? They weren't able to take like a ranger.
I think they had to fly a tow.
Yeah,
they had to fly a tow.
Oh yeah. Folks, this
and then there's the other race with the one without the radar.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. What? No way.
Yeah, that was cool. That was Captain and Pal's race.
That's insane.
No, I think it was Alvarez.
That was almost impossible.
Oh my god. I can't.
You had to know the 000 gate.
Mm-hmm.
You had to research before you even started.
Well, the 00 gate's easy. You just hit.
I don't know. It was a bitch. That's all I know. But you had to know like where it was in proximity to the other ones, you know, so that you could figure out which way to turn to get to your gate.
Yeah, navigate by the stars.
Exactly.
God.
And plus, if you I can't remember. Never mind.
Well, folks, this is just some of the stuff you can do in Jumpgate. And now, seriously, is a great time to join because there's more pilots online now than there were for a.
Almost 5 years
long
or longer.
Time.
Yeah, for like the last several years of the game, it never went above 100. I don't think.
Oh no,
never.
We peaked at 50 on a good night.
Yeah,
on like the best night.
On fight
like
night.
Once a year.
The Thursday night fight night.
Or when I'm like, hey, let's break 100 today, and we get like 79 pilots.
Yeah,
we broke 120 the other night, didn't we, Reagan?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, awesome. Which is first time in a long time. But folks,
and of course, the other very good reason to play is it's free.
Yeah,
it's free.
Not free to play. It's free.
It's free as shit, people.
And you don't have to have an amazing system to run it.
Oh god,
the older the better.
You don't even need a joystick, though. It helps. You don't need one. So I would like to thank you guys for joining us tonight. This seems like a good place to wrap up. We've been talking for a while.
Yeah.
We could probably do this all night.
We could probably do this all night, but I don't know if people would want to listen to a 3-hour podcast. Yeah.
We've probably lost them by now anyway.
I hope not. No, what I hope is that they're logged in while they're listening. That'd be the best. Like, I want to try this stuff they're talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I need to log in.
Yeah. And right? So folks, yeah, if you do log in either while you're listening to this or after, just keep an eye out for Regan, Ambrosius, Veloxy, myself, Elder, a few others. Everyone's very
happy to help.
Everyone's helpful.
We're just damn happy to be there.
Oh yeah.
That's right.
So on behalf of I'd like to thank Chris and Mark and Matthew and Oleg and Peter and Shonda for joining us, and on the post I'll list everyone's game name as well at their handle so y'all know who to look for us in the game. And Jim, thank you as always for the noob questions. I appreciate that.
Well, that's all I could do because.
Well, no, that works. That's it helped keep things flowing. I think if you hadn't been asking us those things, we just talk about. Remember when?
It would just be a lot of reminiscing.
Even though the game is up again, it'd be a lot of reminiscing because there were a lot of.
It's old core. Yeah,
there were some glory days.
My experience right now, like Peter had suggested about running cargo missions. Right, or transport.
Flying right now, which right. I think is hilarious.
And well, yeah. So I was I couldn't stand it, right? Because we're talking about this, and it's like so
currently trying to reach the fucking planet in the background right now. About 700K out.
Yeah. So the thing that I see, I looked at the missions, right, and I see that whenever I go out and mine roids, I get a certain amount of money. And then if I fly a transport mission, which means that I have to spend like a half hour going through different waypoints to get there, I'm getting about the same amount of money. So it doesn't really seem like it's more lucrative to do the transport missions.
Are you straightforward mining?
Level 3 cargo missions from Wake to OP will net you about 60 to 80K.
Oh, well, that changes the story. So, yeah, because I was going from the here to the
time. And 3K experience.
But you won't get as much XP, and if you level up quicker, then you can do things that are much more lucrative than that.
Well, like, if, for example, you get leveling medals, if you do it in so many hours, which will give you XP, you want to get your PR to 125 in each faction, which gives you 10,000 EXP.
That's your Novas.
And then, you know, XP is what you need to level to get gear and ships that don't suck. So,
yeah,
provided you can find them on station.
And once you get into the light miner, the heavy miner, you can make a lot more money than make doing anything
I
else.
I want
in the
my
game.
Comsin so badly. I miss the Comsin.
The transport missions, is it because I have to pick the destination where I want to go and then see if there's a transport mission available. So do
always.
I try?
Well, there's always a transport mission available.
So am I trying to pick a place that's pretty far away, like the further away?
No. The better. For transport missions, you want them as close as possible.
Okay.
Yeah. So like Quantar Depot to Quantar Tripoint, those are like the closest stations together.
Oh, okay, because I was doing from Quantar Core to the depot, and I'm only getting like 10,000. For a mission.
Yeah, no. That's,
well, when you get to Tripoint, I'll log in and try to get you some better gear by brokering, and I can help you out.
Well, I've got a pretty decent ship.
You'll go faster.
Hey, man, he's got to earn his stripes.
I need some drop tanks. And the only place there are any is QC, and I don't have enough PR for it.
Yeah,
we'll do some missions.
Yeah, I want some respect engines, and I need to do some missions for Soul, goddammit, because that's where they all are.
Yep.
Why do you want respect, man and players?
Yeah,
what?
Heller's the best size, too.
I'm only in a breeze right now. It's really the best I can get.
You can run impellers in a breeze.
Impellers?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need radar.
Should be able to.
Who needs a shield?
Yeah.
So where were you saying that the good transport is between?
He's
Quant, so I'm telling him down.
So from Core to Tripoint?
Go to Core to Tripoint and then run Depot, Tripoint.
Okay, because Depot to Tripoint's given me 11,000. That's why I was kind of like.
It's your XP.
Let me look. Yeah, it's 1,300 XP. And it's 17,000.
But it's shorter distance, so you can do it faster.
Okay.
But also, I forgot about this until Regan pointed it out, Shonda, that you mine on the way, and then you take the mining mission when you get to where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two for one.
Yeah, but the mining, I never get anything but commons unless I use coordinates to go out and try to find a better rock.
That's fine.
Right. So you can just do coordinates, and then anything that you have like 0.1 of left over, keep it.
Mm. Well, it said that I couldn't.
It'll accumulate.
It said in the depot that I couldn't.
No, you got to keep it in your hold. Oh, you can't drop it on.
Gotcha.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like right now, your goal is experience more than credits, because the experience is what's going to get you into the ships that let you make good credits.
Yeah. And the
you don't really upgrade
easy. I'm not running short of money.
So. Yeah.
Because I don't have to pay.
I mean, I didn't even come out of with the upgrade for the Premia, the second one, until I got to the light fighter. I didn't bother. I just didn't bother. There wasn't any reason to. The SC sucks.
I'm waiting to get to the fast transport. That's my next goal.
So the one thing that makes me really...
I'm looking for the vedette, and I'll go back to Artie hunting.
As a guy who only has a mining laser, it makes me a little nervous whenever I see a lot of pink dots on the radar.
If you are equipped properly, like, has somebody brokered for you?
No.
I've tried to before, but you denied me. if you are properly equipped in that ship, you will go faster than the flux you will encounter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Everything up
so
to...
So they can't touch you.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you hit a swarm, then you're screwed.
Okay, so, yeah, folks, let's wrap this up. Everyone, thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening to wax and wane about this amazing game. And try and... I hope that folks, by all our stories and all our, you know, all our discussion, that we've got you interested at least in trying the game out. Because, again, it's free. It runs on – it'll run on your smartwatch.
Mm-hmm.
It'll run what's that Samsung smartwatch right now? It'll run on that. And it'll run on your Android phone, for Christ's sake, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a great game with a great community. So please stop by.
Come on down. We'll hook you up.
Come on down. We'll help you out. We will lead you. We will show you a fabulous time.
We'll keep the light on for you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good night.
See you, Brian.
See you.
Thanks, Brian.
And we're out.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler.
Sure thing.
Down, but I see only one. When I think I'm over you, I find I've just begun. The years move faster than the days. There's no more than the light. And how I miss those desert skies.